Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Here's how technology writer Hiawatha Bray began his column in the Boston Globe today. Maybe we should get President-elect Trump to the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas and have him give a speech about making America weird again. That really made me want to read on. Every year, the show presents hundreds of the latest clever gadgets and devices. This year, they range from driverless cars to an internet-connected hairbrush. So joining us now from the 50th Annual Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, the capital of weird, is Hiawatha Bray, tech columnist for the business section of the Boston Globe. Hiawatha, welcome. Good to have you.
Oh, thanks to be. I'm glad to be here.
So
Go ahead.
You're about to jump in. Go right ahead.
No, I was just going
to
say that all I was doing was complaining about the fact that on my first day here, all the weird stuff seemed to have come from Europe and China. I just wanted to let you know that I finally found a really great weird product from the good old USA.
Oh, good. Well, tell us about that.
It's from a company you never would have expected. Whirlpool.
Whirlpool. Yeah, not exactly the avatars of weird, right.
Of Benton Harbor, Michigan, of all places. Good old Whirlpool. They are here with a device that is designed to make compost of all your kitchen waste in 24 hours.
Wow.
This is an $1,100 device that sits on the floor. You take your rotten tomatoes and your eggshells and all that. You dump it in there. You put in a chemical, and it grinds the stuff up. And in 24 hours at the bottom, you get mulch. And they're planning to try to sell this to the public. They're going to put it on Indiegogo to see if they can find people crazy enough to spend $1,100 on that. And it just but the reason I love stuff like that is because it sounds weird, but that's where the great new innovations are going to come from. The people who are going to try something that sounds absolutely nuts.
That's amazing.
And little by little, you come here to see this. I'm right now at the main convention center, but I should be over at the Sands Convention Center, because down in the basement, they have this thing called Eureka Park, where all the crazy stuff is, and I want to get in there and really find a lot of it.
All right. Well, I look forward to reading about more of that crazy stuff. But tell me, I wanted to ask you about cars, because it seems like there's a lot of talk about cars, particularly driverless cars, right?
You just don't know. This has turned into arguably America's most important auto show. I was talking to a guy from the German automotive press. He said increasingly German newspapers and magazines that cover the auto industry aren't even sending people to the Detroit Auto Show in January, which used to be the big one.
Of course.
They're sending them to CES. Nine of the world's major car companies are here. They are introducing all kinds of stuff here. Hyundai was here, and I got to ride around in their autonomous car. Really cool. I mean, you know, people are crossing in front of it. It just stops. The light turns red. It knows the light turns red. It even knows when it pulls up to an intersection that's legal to turn right on. It already knows that, and so it makes a right turn on red. It's amazing how far they've gotten. And the thing about the Hyundai car is most of these self-driving cars you see tested have all these gadgets on them, and the radars and the lasers, and you can tell there's something weird with them. This car looks like a car. You wouldn't know, except they had labels on it. You wouldn't know it was a self-driving car. That's how much better they're getting at it. But on the other hand, don't think you're going to see these things routinely on the roads for another 10 to 15 years. No way. It's going to take forever just to get the government approvals. But they're working, and they're amazingly good already.
Let me play a bit of tape from one of the big announcements out there. It came last night from Audi of America President Scott Keogh, who said the company's self-driving car, which uses artificial intelligence, will hit the market as you suggested. Well, he says by 2020. Here's what he said.
We want to get to this nirvana state safer, and we want to get there sooner. And really, the only way to go about doing that, there's no amount of programming in the world that's going to manage the complexity of what happens in the street environments daily. The only way to get there is with artificial intelligence.
So the only way to get there is with artificial intelligence. What exactly is he referring to? I mean,
is that in the last few years, these guys have been able to do the most amazing advancements in getting computers to learn from real-world experience and change what they do. These cars are going to be out there with people behind the wheel to protect us, and they are going to just drive every road they can drive, and as they do, they record everything that happens, and they, in effect, think about it, just as a human does, and get better at it every time. Why do you think when you talk to your phone nowadays and use the speech recognition system, it's so accurate? It's because the computers learn now. And that's what he's talking about. The only way to get this right is to start putting more and more test vehicles on the road and have them learn their way around. And the more each of these vehicles learn, the more all of them learn. Because, like, for example, every Audi car that's out there on test, That information is shared with all the other Audi cars. And so there's this, going to be this exponential improvement in these things over time. And in a few years, they're just going to get so much more. It's just going to be shocking how much better they're going to be in just a few years.
Do you think he's really going to get a self-driving car with all that artificial intelligence on to the market by 2020? That sounds incredibly optimistic to me.
That's the general area that all these companies. Last year, Ford Motor Company walked in here and said 2021, we'll be selling them. They will sell them first as taxi cabs. They won't be selling to the general public. That's the thing. It's not that they're not going to have the technology. It's that it's going to take years for the average person to get hold of this. The early ones are probably going to cost well over $100,000. They're going to be sold to fleets. It's going to take years to get the pricing down. And it will be a long time before they become commonplace.
Yeah.
But yeah, I fully expect them to be selling them by 2020, 2021. All the major car companies plan to do it.
You know what I'm going to be really impressed is when these cars fly. Okay, I'm just saying that right now. I want them to fly.
I know. I'm that generation too. But no, I think this is much more interesting in many ways. But it is really a fascinating problem also philosophically. Because when that car stops, when it sees a person coming out into traffic, you begin to realize we've crossed a bridge here. Our relationship with machines is going to be permanently changed by the self-driving car, because now we are going to start thinking about cars as if they were really thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to really start thinking of machines as interacting with us the same way humans do. And that's going to change the way we think about computers, robots, cars permanently. Once these things hit the road, it's like a turning point.
Wow. Well, speaking of thinking about things differently, let's get back to some of the weird stuff. So am I right? An internet-powered hairbrush?
Not quite. It's a hairbrush that talks to your smartphone. This is about one of the most important things that's happened in the last 10 years, too, which I would call the sensor revolution. The fact that you can put little chips into devices that can measure practically anything you can think of. Mm. They put a microphone in this. They got an accelerometer in it. They got a gyroscope in it. Nowadays, all those things just cost pennies. You put them into a device, and you can actually listen to the brush going through your hair. You can detect the number of strokes and the angle at which you're holding the brush, and the handle of the brush will vibrate to tell you you're doing it wrong, and it will transmit over a Bluetooth radio to an app on your phone a sort of a pattern showing here's how dry your hair is based on the noise it makes when you pull your brush through it. Here's how many strokes you did. Here's the parts of your hair you remembered to brush and the parts you didn't remember to brush.
Now, did you try this brush, Hiawatha?
No, I asked, and the lady said, no, your hair, it is too short. It was like, forget this. And she's right.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't think they need to have a bald spot. They actually do. I didn't try that. There's a helmet in here you're supposed to wear. It shines light on your head, and it grows hair. And I don't know if it works or not, but this is the second year they're here, so they aren't out of business yet. So.
All right. Well, that's Hiawatha Bray. He's technology writer for the business section of the Boston Globe, reporting from the 50th annual Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Hiawatha, always great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
All
right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Let's turn now to the Remembrance Project. Writer Alyssa Eli's look at the extraordinary lives of people from our community. Today, Alyssa recalls the relatively brief life of a young man from the town of Harvard, Massachusetts.
Even before he was born, Michael Hazel made someone else's life easier. Gina Hazel's pregnancy was a joy, and her delivery was over in an hour and a half. Michael came into the world giving. By his own account, he was just an ordinary guy. By his mother's, he was a man of few words who managed to matter in 100 ways. When Michael was a boy, someone in their small town had the tremors and disfigurement of Parkinson's disease. Kids were casually mocking him one day.
He was always very quiet, but he immediately stood up, I guess, and said, "Hey, you know, you don't make fun of him. He's my mother's friend." And I thought, oh my gosh, you know. It just kind of warms your heart, warms your soul that he, you know, was like that.
Michael loved being outdoors, hiking, hunting, snowmobiling. By 3, he was pushing a chair around a hockey rink on skates. But mostly he loved to ski, and he shared his passion with the twin siblings who adored him. After college, he lived at home, allegedly saving money, when he bought his younger brother an expensive set of skis for his birthday. Just for the joy of skiing together. He also shared his passion with the friends he held close.
Even when he went skiing in January, he went out and he bought 8 ski tickets at a very expensive mountain. And I said, 8 ski tickets? And he says, oh, yeah, you know, I want to go skiing with my friends. Like, he just didn't think much of it. You know, he was just a giver.
Towards the end of that trip, doing what he loved, Michael's Subaru missed a sharp turn on a Vermont back road. It was early, an icy morning. The car veered and struck a tree. Hundreds and hundreds of people waited in line at the wake. The family had come early, and Gina wasn't sure how they would survive.
All of a sudden, as the four of us were in this room, it blizzardly snowed out of nowhere. It was just snowing, and all four of us were just like, oh my gosh. You know, that's a sign for Mike, because he loved the snow. He loved skiing. He loved winter. He loved the outdoors. And we thought that that was just him saying that he's okay and that he'll always be with us.
Michael's father is a volunteer firefighter, and the department showed in uniform for the funeral. After the reception, there was a noise outside. The fire station and engine bells were ringing. They rang and rang and rang. In farewell to this generous man who had always made so little noise himself.
Writer Alyssa Eli remembering Michael Hazel, who died last January in a car crash in Vermont. If you'd like to suggest someone for a remembrance, send us an email to remember@wbur.org. Stay with us. Coming up, If Our Bodies Could Talk, doctor and journalist James Hamblin is in the studio to take your calls. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.